One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
It's all about the macro productions.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rumble, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. If you haven't rated the show yet, please do that. It'll take a couple seconds. It matters to us as we fight this ridiculous algorithm battle. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is a great website for that, but I hope you're also checking out activistpost.com and naturalblaze.com to get some information from those sites over there. If you want to follow me on social media, at macroaggressions on X, at macroaggressions podcast underscore podcast on Instagram. There's so much to do, so much to cover. We appreciate our sponsors. They allow us the opportunity to do this show. If you haven't already gotten yourself prepared with storable food for the impending, catastrophe, Trumpocalypse, however you want to define it, you probably should. And I don't care if you buy the storable food from My Patriot Supply, our sponsor, or if you just go down to the grocery store and load up the back of your car. Just do something. You don't want to be caught in a situation where you're not ready. My Patriot Supply has been nice enough to build a landing page for us. It's easy. You can just go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. The link is down in the show notes if you were interested in getting some storable food for yourself, or maybe you've already gotten yourself buttoned up and there's somebody in your life, a family member, maybe someone out of state who you want to make sure that they're taken care of. Well, you can just buy it and have it sent to them. It's real easy. There's plenty of options over there on the website, and they're having sales all the time. So if you're interested, best thing to do, go do a little online shopping. Go check out preparewithmacroaggressions.com. Get yourself some storable food that'll last you a quarter of a century. They've got camping gear. They've got all sorts of supplies, things that you would need in the event that things get bad, and we're hoping that they don't. But we're anticipating that they could, and we're making our moves in advance of that. So preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the place to find that. Also, a huge thanks to our folks over at Legal Shield. They've been doing this in the United States and Canada for over 50 years. They have lawyers. They've got lawyers for you. Do you need one? You hopefully you don't, but in the event that you need to button up some paperwork, last will and testament, medical directive, financial power of attorney, got to have them. Got to have them. Get them done. Get them done now. Get them done at a reasonable price. How reasonable? $30 a month. That'll get you in the door. That'll get you access to the app that'll go on your phone. And then it is really simple. You just click a couple buttons, drop down menu, tap some, you tap on the documents that you want, submit. You'll get a call from an attorney in your area in the next 24 hours and you take it from there. It's about the easiest thing you'll do. It's so reasonably priced that I don't want to jinx myself, but I feel like they're probably bound to raise the price at some point, but they haven't yet. So I don't know. Take a look. They built a site for us as well. It's called don'tgetpushedaround.com. And if you go there, then you can find out everything you need to know about the Legal Shield plans that they offer. There's a la carte add-on features you can add to your package as well, like ID Shield. And if you carry a gun, they have documentation for that. If you run a small business, there's a small business plan as well. There's a lot going on. There's a lot you can do. And I've been a member for the last couple of years. I've been representing them on this show since that time. We have a lot of people that have signed up for it. I'm good for you. I'm glad I'm on the program too. I use it from time to time, not every month, but every now and then I use it. And when I need it, I'm so glad I have it. So if you're interested, no hard sell. I'm just telling you what's out there. If you think it might be something that you're interested in, go to don'tgetpushedaround.com. Well, these sponsors are kind of in the same vein of what we're going to be talking about today, because we're going to be talking about fear. And I don't want to make people fearful about the things that are coming. That's the media's job. That's not my job. But if we're going to be honest about what we see and how things are transpiring, there's some things that might not be great. And so we have to make this calculation. Do we ignore them, pretend like they're not there, and say, I don't like fear, so let's just ignore it and hopefully it goes away? Well, we could do that. And certainly people have done that, but you can't deny reality when it comes back to get you. And so I actually would prefer to side on being proactive. It doesn't mean being fearful. It just means recognizing where things can go and then making some calculations based on that. And maybe it is a bit scary because you have to look at the current state of things, but is it, would you rather have that fear manifest in the future tenfold, or would you rather take care of it now while you can? You know, this is why I advocate for things like storable food, great health supplements, things like that, because you got to take care of your body before it starts breaking down. You got to take care of your financial situation before it's a problem, you know? And so it doesn't make you fearful to be thinking about these things in advance. It makes you responsible. I mean, and especially if it's more than just you, if you have a family to that depends on you, you have to get honest about things. And there has been quite a bit of fear pumped out into the world, and some of it is justified and some of it is not. And what we're going to talk about today is all of the ways in which fear is used to control us, what it does to us on a physiological level, scientifically, what it does to your body. It's more than just puts you in a bad mood or scares you for a couple hours or whatever. There are physical components to this that change your body. We're going to talk about the economic side of things for sure. We're going to talk about, we'll talk about the media. I mean, if anyone is the great pushers of fear, it's the corporate whores at CNN and MSNBC and Washington Post and, you know, Fox News and all these things. And we're going to wrap up talking about the future with regard to where we're going militarily. And so we're going to be honest about these things because we owe it to ourselves to do that. And we can talk about them. We can talk about scary components of this without being black-pilled, the new term, right, to get you to disassociate from those people and not listen to them, because all they want to do is push fear. You know, they're just all black. Everybody's black-pilled. Well, some people are, okay? And I can't even fault them for it. They see the negativity out there, and they have assigned a little bit too much weight to that as opposed to the positivity. It's a calculation everybody has to make. There's no right or wrong to it. It depends on your life experiences and where you are in your trajectory on this planet and how you have been raised and whether or not you're extremely fearful of this. And then on top of that, it's, what do you do? Do you curl up into a ball and suck your thumb and wait for daddy to come fix it? Or does that challenge you to wake up and say, okay, I'm scared of my situation right now. I can either complain about it, I can do nothing about it, or I can start making some plans to get myself out of it. It just depends on what your mindset is and how you view this and we've done them all, right? We've curled up into a ball before and prayed that it would go away. We've cried about it. We've bitched to our friends about it. And sometimes we've actually actively gotten up and done something about it, right? So there's different ways to tackle this. It's not a right or wrong situation, but I think it's important that we talk about how fear is used to manipulate us and how it's used to psychologically traumatize us and what that does, because it does a lot to us. And then most importantly, how to rise above it. I mean, how to fix this problem, how to recognize when somebody is trying to make you fearful, maybe even examine their motives for doing it, and then position yourself so that you are out of the way of it and so that it no longer affects you. Have you ever seen somebody just having a really bad day and you can relate to them, but it's not your bad day, it's theirs, and you're watching them spiral out of control? And I'm going to generalize here, but I know this is not the case for, but sometimes the women like to come up and say, hey, calm down, snap out of this. That is, in my, you know, in the amount of time I've been on this planet, that is the last thing in the world I want somebody to do to me when I'm really in a bad spot. Is I don't want somebody to come up to me and say, hey man, snap out of it, everything's going to be fine. It's like, it's not fucking fine right now. It's really not fine right now. In fact, you're making it worse by trying to tell me that everything's going to be fine because you're not in my situation. So we've watched people have bad days. And sometimes it's funny. Let's be honest, especially if the person deserves it. If it's a, you know, shitty person having a shitty day, there's part of you that just wants to grab the popcorn and go, oh brother, you deserve this. You know, you had this coming to you, and I'm here for it. I'm here to watch you suffer. But I think that given our current situation, we could make a long list of the things that we could be terrified of, but we have to assign some sort of statistical probability. You know, I could be worried that a meteor is going to hit the planet and, you know, and wipe us all out. Some days I might even be begging for it, but statistically speaking, this is a low probability. So we'll find that our reaction to a potential fear is disproportionately higher than the actual rate of it happening or whatever it is. So sometimes it's just a matter of changing our perspective on things. But anyway, the episode title to this show, it obviously calls in FDR's famous quote from March 4th, 1933, during his inauguration. The quote goes like this: so first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed effort to convert retreat into advance. So this was FDR's big speech, you know, nothing to fear but fear itself. That's how it gets spun from this point out. The irony that FDR is talking about fear, right? Fearful of his life. You know, he's coming off of being the governor of New York. And this is a guy who was controlled by the Jewish mob, the Italian mob, and the Wall Street bankers. So if he knew anything about his current predicament, you know, he should be fearful. He's dealing with the most dangerous groups around. And then, of course, he led us into World War II at the behest of those same groups, most importantly, the Wall Street bankers. So let's talk about modern fear, the fear that we are internalizing right now. There are plenty of reasons why the controllers would want a world filled with constant fear. Fear controls people the best. It's the most effective way. It works on a biological level. It works on a psychological level. You know, it works on a sociological level. You can turn around, walk around a corner and see a group of people all running towards you in fear, and that fear is contagious. You don't know the situation. You don't know why they're running. You just see that they're all running. You turn around, maybe you start running too. So we've watched this feeling be weaponized by people who are extremely talented at weaponizing it. The psychological component of groups like Tavistock. We've watched the mainstream media, not just in the news, but through movies and television shows and all of those different War of the Worlds radio, right? The aliens are coming. We're all going to die. It freaked people out, man. People actually will listen to the media. Sometimes they don't know any better. Sometimes they secretly are wanting to be told what to do by the media, secretly wanting to be fearful of the outside world. And so we've turned into a bit of a fight or flight society, you know, if we're being honest about it. Short-term decisions made out of fear, vaccines. You get limited vision when you're in a fight or flight situation. Your field of vision centralizes, and you become myopic. Mainstream media, right? Kind of make these comparisons. In fight or flight, you're living in the moment, sort of like all the people who are racking up personal debt, you know, just living in the moment. Just got to go to SeaWorld this summer, even though I can't afford it. Just got to go buy the newest pair of shoes or whatever, you know, put it on my credit card. Fight or flight, you are emotionally reactive. Oh, I don't know, like on social media, when people are trying to manipulate your emotions there. So the things that happen to you physiologically, psychologically, while you're being chased by a tiger are some of the same things that we experience, and, you know, obviously a different level, but when you're in an argument with some asshole on Twitter, you know what I mean? Your blood pressure rises, your pupils change, your heart rate increases. For the fight or flight, from a scientific standpoint, they call it an autonomous nerve system. This is something that it's reactive. It's automatic. You don't have to dial it up and make all of the calculations. Your brain instantaneously can recognize the second it feels like you're in a near death situation. A couple things happen. Your heart rate changes. Your digestion changes, respiratory rate increases. The autonomous nerve system is responsible for your need for urination. That's why people piss themselves when they're scared. Sexual arousal, you know, pupil response. All these are automated bodily functions that are controlled by what's known as the autonomous nerve system. It's just autopilot in the event that you get scared. And the body is a brilliant machine, you know, intelligently designed. And over the years, you know, we've benefited from this. But if you're not in a place where you face actual danger every day, then we supplement that danger. We add artificial danger. And it comes to us through the media a lot of times. One of the things that happens if you're in a fight or flight situation is that your body will this is where you hear of like mothers lifting cars off of their babies that get trapped underneath them, things like that. And you go, get the fuck out of here. That can't happen. Well, maybe not in every case with every lady, with every baby, but it has happened and it does happen. One of the things that your body does is increases one's strength, increases your reaction time. It even goes so far as to increase your blood clotting abilities. It triggers messages inside your body that says, if we get into a situation where we start bleeding, we need you to clot better than you've ever clotted before. And your body has already made that calculation, and it has sent all of the messages to the systems that it needs to say that all you guys on the clotting team, let's go. This is not a drill. Get dressed. We might need you. So your respiratory rate changes, your blood flow changes, all of these things. The problem is that all of these things are temporary. You know, so you get this increased strength. You get this. I mean, I don't know how many of you have ever been in a fight before, like a real live fist fight. It's scary, of course, because you don't know how it's going to end. But if you're interested in just the experimental component of it, you go through a fight, you know, maybe don't go out. I'm not talking like Fight Club, go out and pick a fight with some guy on the street or anything. But if you get into a fight, or if you remember being in a fight, your body reacts very differently. You get tunnel vision. It's hard to hear anything. For me, I remember having almost, there was a point in one of the fights I was in on my 22nd birthday where I could see myself from above. I had a third perspective, an out of body experience. I could see from above what was going on while I was on top of this guy, just pummeling him, in my defense, because he knocked out my date. So that's why I got into it. But when it all ended, it was like everything kind of hit me all at once. It was your emotions kick in. I had a couple drinks, but boy, in that moment, I was stone cold sober when I was in the middle of that fight. I mean, everything, it was like everything gets put on hold, right? So your body is amazing when dealing with fear and in those situations. But the problem is it's temporary, and these feelings go away, and your adrenaline subsides, and your breathing calms down eventually, and everything sort of, and then you start to kind of put the pieces back together. What did I just experience? What was happening here? You know, and you're almost not the best arbiter of it too, because you're in it and you don't have the perspective, and you almost kind of need to have your friends say, well, you know, this is what happened here. This is what you couldn't see, or maybe you could see it, but you were so locked in that you were not yourself, you know? And that takes time to calm down. And one of the things, you know, you need time to recover after that. And cortisol in your body is bad for you. I mean, I don't know all of the details of what it does. You'd need to talk to Christian Yordanov about that. But it turns to poison inside your system. And if you've got low-level fear all day long because you're worried about paying the rent, don't think that doesn't add up. It takes a physical toll on you. And I know it's easy to say, well, don't be fearful of it. I'm like, well, yeah, but I am, you know? So like, what do you want me to do? Be aware of it, be mindful of it, but to the extent that you can, don't dwell in it, because it's more than just you're in a bad mood or it ruined my day. It's ruining your physical health as well. Cognitive components from fight or flight, mostly negative. Attention to negative stimuli, meaning from that point forward, you see every situation becomes a negative situation. Perception of situations is negative, they say. You get into a situation and you'll be predisposed to already be fearful of that. You hear reoccurring negative words that trigger you into this fearful mindset. Acute stress, this is what fight or flight is called in some cases. Acute stress has been used as an actual legal defense in court. Your Honor, I was out of my mind. I was so scared. Why did you mag dump into the guy that was breaking into your house? Because I was scared. And I shot the guy 15 times because I was scared. That's a legitimate excuse. Let's talk about the strategy of tension. We've done entire episodes on that. This is NATO Operation Gladio. They came up with a concept, which is awful when you think about this, but it's called the strategy of tension. And the purpose behind that was to keep everybody, general public, everybody in the general public, just a little bit uneasy, not comfortable. And the way you do that is through random violence. So it's one thing if you make a calculation that you're in New York City, and New York City is a big town, and there's a lot of people, and it's known for being unpredictable, and there's a lot of shitheads there, and you may get robbed, or you may get murdered, and you sort of make a calculation and expect the potential for violence in a big city like that. But what if you live in a small town? You know, what if you live in a place where nobody thinks about you, and a car bomb goes off there? Well, then the calculation is no place is safe. I mean, it's one thing if this car bomb is going off in New York City and you sort of expect that maybe that's happening, but you certainly don't expect it in Lincoln, Nebraska, right? But when that starts happening, then what it does is it sends a chilling effect over the population, which is you're not safe here either. You may think you're safe, but you're not, because we've now introduced the possibility that this could happen in your small town too, because it happened in that small town over there. It's one thing if it's the big city. You're not in the big city, so you don't have to worry about that. You're in the little small town. Well, now it's happening in a small town, so now you have to be fearful of it. Now, how you manage that fear, you can just make a statistical case for it and say, based on the number of small towns divided by the number of FBI terrorists, because they're always tied to the FBI, I've come up with a calculation that it's probably not going to happen to me. Probably not going to happen to me in this town. And even if it happens in this town, probably not going to happen when I'm walking down the street, right? So I'm not going to be fearful. But if you are somebody that watches the mainstream media, they'll try to make you fearful of it, right? They'll try to get you to always be in this place of potential chaos. And that's the strategy of tension. You can do it a variety of ways. I use car bombs as an example, simply because NATO used to set off car bombs and do that when they weren't blowing up train stations or shooting up grocery stores or shooting up schools. All these things that have been normalized into American society were all happening in Europe in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And it was being done by NATO, who we finance, right? So it was the good guys sitting around acting as domestic terrorist groups. So it could happen. But again, most of us don't worry about that. Here's what we do worry about. We worry about our financial lives, inflation, expenses. The number one cause of stress in a marriage is finances. So are you coming up short every month? Are you running a deficit, needing to put items on your credit card at the end of each month because there's just not enough money? And then that credit card balance keeps growing and growing and compounding, and it's getting out of control. And you're looking at that and you're saying, shit, you know, based on my current trajectory, I'm never going to be able to pay that. I can't even cover this month's bill, let alone make a dent in my credit card bill. Oh my God, I'm going to lose everything. And that anxiety starts to build. There's also the segment of the population that should be anxious about that, and yet strangely are not. Like, they're just so disconnected and in denial that they're like, ah, fuck it, I've got bills, but who cares? You know, we'll just work it out later. I aspire to that level of not giving a fuck, but unfortunately, I understand math. And so those calculations I am making and saying, well, based on money, I have to do X, Y, and Z. And so I don't get the luxury of just pretending like everything is going to be taken care of at some point. Regulatory tension, things like, from a business standpoint, uncertainty of when Biden was president, or whoever was president when Biden was supposed to be president, and they were making these sweeping regulations using OSHA to strong-arm people into taking vaccines, shutting down oil and gas leases and things like that. You know, just creating chaos. Now, that level of regulatory anxiety takes a toll on people as well. I mean, it's hard to plan what you're going to do with your business when the people in positions of power inside your government are constantly changing the rules on you all the time. How can you plan? How can you make a 5-year plan for your business if you don't know if Joe fucking Biden is going to tell you that tomorrow you need to reimagine your indoor restaurant as an outdoor restaurant in a tent because of COVID? You know, societal tensions. We've got race wars. We've got red team versus blue team. We've got migrants coming up through the southern border. We've got all that stuff. Is that going to affect you on a daily basis? Not the migrants, maybe not. If you live by the southern border, if you live in El Paso, Texas, you could see it with your own eyeballs. It's a problem. If you live in Wyoming, it's not a problem. It's just not, right? So it depends on where you are in the world geographically, and also, you know, how you allow these things to impact you. Are you on the red team? Are you on the blue team? Are you on no team like me? A lot of people take that stuff, they internalize it, it's very personal to them. And when you start shitting on their guy, they view that as a personal attack against them. And the Democrats and Republicans are in existence because of fear. If it wasn't for fear, they wouldn't have a job. They need this. So it's quite a statement when they come out and say, you know, that they're here to, we're from the government, we're here to help. You know, as Reagan would talk about how the most dangerous words in the English language. But it's also a lie, because they're not here to help. They're here to make you fearful, because when you're fearful, then you offload your sovereignty to them. You say, please, somebody come and save me. Somebody come and help me. I'm in a bad spot. There's a horrible situation and I need your help, without recognizing that the situation you're in is likely caused by the very government that you think is going to come help you out, offer you a bailout. We got bailouts. Are the bailouts going to you, or are the bailouts going to the big banks? It's never coming for you, right? So first and foremost, don't allow the government to put you in a position of fear. And second of all, if you are there, sir, do not expect them to come save you. Please don't. More on this scarcity, right? Scarcity creates a mindset of lacking. You know, I lack, therefore I am fearful. This could be financially. This could be food related, land. You know, you've got policies. Tension through policies, NAFTA. If you were alive, you know, if you were somebody that was in the workforce in the 90s when NAFTA was passed, you had no idea. I mean, unless you listened to Ross Perot, you had no idea what was coming. But he told it like it was going to be. We're going to lose all these factories. They're all going away. Now, was that a statement that you should be fearful of, or was that a statement of fact? It was both, actually. It was a statement of fact. This is the direction it's going to go. And also, you should be fearful of this a little bit, meaning you should recognize that this is going to happen and then plan accordingly and make some moves. Because otherwise, if you're somebody that works in a factory in the Rust Belt, Ohio, you know, Gary, Indiana, someplace, oh, we'll be fine. Will you, though? It doesn't make you fearful to make a calculation. So these policies can create massive tension. Federal Reserve's entire reason for existing is to keep people fearful and in control through their fiat Ponzi scheme that they're running. Tension comes in a variety of ways. Also emotional tension, right? Short temper, antisocial, suicidal, you know? All these fears, they come up. emotionally. You don't have to be, you don't have to have a guy pointing a gun. You don't have to have a physical interaction with a guy pointing a gun at your head to make you fearful. It can be something as simple as just an emotional situation that you're put in. Technologically, AI is coming to take your job. Are you fearful of that? They want you to be. Should you be? I don't know. Depends on your job. There's nothing wrong with being afraid of something, provided that you then use that as the impetus to start finding some solutions to it. If all you do is consume fear without any sort of opportunity to settle it or fix it or move on from it or learn from it, then you're just going to be a fear collector. You're just going to be swallowing all of that, and it will manifest inside of you until you're a hypochondriac who's too afraid to go outside, or you're those people that we saw during COVID with the fucking fish tanks over their head, you know, the 5-gallon bottles of plastic water bottles that they've turned into a makeshift oxygen tank while they're walking down the frozen food aisle. And you look at them and you go, oh, you're broken. You are mentally broken, and you may never recover from this. Do you want to be that? So it's important to recognize when somebody is trying to scare you, because if you can understand it, if you can understand the mechanisms behind it, it makes you harder to fall for it. When you realize that they're trying to scare the shit out of you by showing you the pictures of the people falling down during COVID in China, or the guy who's throwing up blood everywhere, and you go, okay, out of all the videos that you could have shown us, getting outside and getting fresh air and how we're going to beat this thing, but you're not. You're showing us all of the terrible components of this. Why? Because they want you to be scared. Well, why do you want me to be scared? Well, I want you to be scared because you're controllable when you're scared. Okay, what are you trying to control me into doing? I'm trying to control you into taking this goddamn vaccine. And we'd really appreciate it if you guys would turn off the logical part of your brain and focus on what we're telling you to do. And in order to do that, they've got to get you sufficiently scared. And then your brain turns off automatically. It moves into this fight or flight scenario, which has all these physical all the physical characteristics: heart rate, digestion, respiratory rate, urination, sexual arousal, and pupil response. So we're up against it. These people know psychologically how to manipulate you. They also know what your body will do physically once they have manipulated you into this fear mentality. They also stress you out socially, right? Families breaking up, freedom of speech being removed. What we're seeing now online, you're seeing, you know, Palestinian protesters at college campuses having their visas revoked, getting arrested and sent out. Now, is it happening to you? No, it's not happening to you. It's not happening to anybody that you know. You've never met any of these. You only see it on the TV. In fact, if that TV was off, if you'd been out of town for the last month, you wouldn't even know it was happening. For whatever reason, we're supposed to be fearful of it, right? What if it happens to me next? What if I'm next? What if they try to take my speech away? What if I say something and get on the wrong side of this government and they try to, I don't have a green card. What if they try to deport me to El Salvador, put me in a supermax prison? Then what would I do? You know, and all this stuff, you start going down this path. Oh, I would do this and I would do that and I wouldn't allow that and I'd move to Mexico. And blah. And you go, holy shit, I just went through that entire mental exercise for nothing, because none of this is ever going to happen. So you also have to get honest about the possibility that this fear is actually going to impact you. Now, if it is, do something about it. But if it isn't, recognize it and move on from it. Because if you drag all those fears around, they just compound and build until you find some way to clear them out and reset yourself. You're just going to be dragging fear everywhere you go. They love to promote insecurity, the insecurity of everything: food insecurity, financial insecurity, insecurity of love, insecurity of every component of your life, health insecurity. If they can get you feeling like there's a lack of, they'll do it, because they know that the ultimate goal is to keep you penned in down on the sheep reservation with the rest of us and controllable. And fear is the most effective tool they have. So you have to find where that line is between allowing yourself to recognize the very real threats that we face and making some sort of calculation on what the percentages are for something like that. You know, you have to assign some sort of betting odds to it. If you're somebody that likes sports like me and you know that everybody's betting, you know, sometimes there's just a long shot occurrence that, you know, you can bet on. And if it happens, you know, the odds are stacked in a way that you pay off from that. So you're going to have to be the one that makes these calculations. They certainly are pushing us towards an economic crash. And that is, boy, that's a real fearful time. If you were around in 2008, when we went through that housing fueled collapse, that was chaos. It was chaos for me. I was in the middle of it and lost two houses and then lost my job and lost my marriage all within 4 months. So, you know, you go through that and it's real easy to feel like there's so many things piling on that I can't even get through one of them, let alone four of these things hitting me all at once. What's the point? Well, you know, this comes from experience and how you compartmentalize that and how you deal with your fears and whatnot. But with this economic crash, I wish I had better news. You know, I'm not trying to be fearful and push people into a mindset where they're panicked about what's coming with the economy in the future. But I would also be doing a disservice to say everything's fine because it's most definitely not fine. The problem is that this fear is actually real and not manufactured. The crisis will be manufactured, but the fear that you experience in a financial collapse will be very real to you. And everybody will, if it makes you feel any better, everybody will be impacted. It's just a matter of degree. So if you think that you're the only one getting hit by this future crash, you're not. It's not going to make you feel too much better, but you just, to the extent that you can, get yourself prepared for that. And let's talk it out now while there's still time to be proactive about it, whether that's getting your money out of the banking system, whether that's, getting yourself some gold, silver, Bitcoin, storable food, bullets, whatever, you know, whatever you think you can do. What you'll find is the fear goes away a little bit. I mean, the fear goes away, not completely. It never fully goes away, but the fear subsides once you are in a position where you are, putting in work and moving towards the goal of making yourself resilient. If you know that you're doing something about it, you're not going to be as fearful. If you're sitting back waiting for somebody to magically swoop in and make everything okay and fix your situation, you may be waiting for a very long time for that. And maybe they may never come to get you. So we've got some real issues that we need to be aware of, not fearful of, but aware of, so that we can figure out how we want to act. Trump's tariffs that he's talking about, maybe it's a negotiating ploy. Maybe it's the beginning of a new economic paradigm. This is a price that is paid by the people, these tariffs, not the state. When you look at how it actually works out. Now, I'm not talking about the sales pitch. They'll give you a sales pitch. Oh, we're not paying for this. China was going to pay for it. And it's like, no, you will ultimately pay for it. That's how this works. Don't insult our intelligence by telling us that we don't have to worry about these taxes that you're putting on things. We will eventually pay the taxes because we know how you feel about us. You hate our guts and you want us to be overburdened with financial responsibilities, and there's no accountability from the state. So of course these tariffs are going to be passed down to us in some form or fashion. Expect that. Now, does that mean you're going to crawl into a hole and wait for it all to be over? Absolutely not. You're not going to get anywhere doing that. There's a dollar collapse that is a possibility. This is Trump's need to devalue the dollar in order to reshore manufacturing. and what that looks like. Maybe it looks good in 10 years after you do something like that. But in the lead up to it, there's going to be pain. It's going to be rough. But if you know what's ahead, you can plan accordingly. You will still probably be fearful of what this means, but at least you won't be caught off guard. And that's a whole different type of fear, where you just didn't even know what you didn't know, and it came and smacked you upside the head. So there's a debt crisis going on right now worldwide. Everybody's overlevered, and at some point, they're going to, somebody at the table, we've been on a hot hand for a long, long time here, but at some point, that guy's going to throw the dice and they're going to seven crap line away, boom, as all the money disappears off the table. Are you ready for that? You've had a good run. You can always walk away from the table before the hot hand loses it, but you just have to make a statistical calculation about that. Bank bail-ins. Here's a prime example of not knowing what you don't know, right? 99% of the people out there have no idea that they legalized bank bail-ins. I'm not even going to say, maybe not even 1% of the people actually know that. And given what we know about how these governments operate, they're not going to legalize something like the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012. They're not going to legalize propaganda unless they intend to use propaganda. They're not going to legalize bank bail-ins unless they intend to use bank bail-ins. So they are going to do it. Should you be fearful of that? Fuck yeah, you should be fearful of that if you've got a bunch of money in the bank and that's going to happen. But here's the good news. It hasn't happened yet. So you can do something about it. Will you be fearful after you get your money out of the bank? Not really. Not as much. I mean, you won't want it to happen. Obviously, it'll hurt people close to you that didn't see it. It's not as though you're rooting for it because you're no longer impacted. But when you know you're no longer in the direct line of fire because you've made some moves accordingly in advance of this, that fear changes. They don't want you to know about that. They don't want you to think about that. When it comes to bank runs, it's psychological. So they need you to be the last person to figure it out. But if you're hearing this and you've been hearing me go on and on and on about this, you can do something about it. That's great news. There's nothing to be fearful about that. We know that they're trying to push central bank digital currencies, stable coins on us. Do you want to go outside and shake your fist at the sky and scream, "Why? Augusta Carlson, you big fat bastard at the Bank of International Settlements, why are you doing this to me?" He doesn't care. He's not going to hear you. Instead, you just have to be proactive and say, "Well, if that's going to happen, then I'm going to do this, this, and this instead. You want me to take a CBDC? I'm not doing that. You want me to have digital money? Fine. We are definitely moving into a world of digital money. So I'm going to have some Bitcoin and I'm going to have some Monero and I'm going to have it off. I'm not going to have it on an exchange. I'm going to have it in cold storage somewhere. And if things get weird, I'll take my little wallet, my digital wallet and my passwords, and I will disappear with them. I'm not going to have to ask a bank if I can have my money, because my money won't be in a bank. I'm not going to ask my boss I'm not going to try and drain my 401. It won't be there. I've got it in a different form that is impervious to these assholes. So how do you feel about that? Well, you feel like you're a little bit more protected. We've got more taxes coming our way. I mean, it's the invisible tax of inflation that we get. And if the finance people that I know, that I talk to about this stuff are correct, we're going to see inflation go through the roof. And that's a hidden tax. That makes everything more expensive for us. So understand that, that's state level theft. They already steal your money when it comes to physically taking your money out of your paycheck for taxes, but then that's not good enough. They have to constantly be destroying you. So they have the inflation of the money supply, so that those people who are savers, who have cash in their savings account, each year that cash is worth a little bit less and a little bit less. That's why rich people don't keep a bunch of cash in their accounts. They convert that cash into assets, houses, paintings, whatever. just anything other than gold, silver, you know, things that you can change your soon to be worthless Federal Reserve notes into just a different form. I mean, we're looking at, speaking of gold, we're looking at gold as a barometer. Gold is going through the roof right now. As of the last time I checked, it was about $3,200 an ounce. Here's a very brief history lesson on gold. Gold doesn't go up during good times. Okay. So if gold is going up, you are in for a rough ride in every other aspect of the economy. Okay. So if you know that and you are of the belief my 401k is going to get wiped out, I would love to sell it. Maybe I can, maybe I can't without getting these penalties. I don't know, but I know I'm going to get clobbered on that. I at least need an offset somewhere else. Well, maybe gold and silver. Silver is at 100-to-1 ratio right now. It should be 15-to-1. It has always been at about 15-to-1. The idea that you can buy silver for $32 an ounce is going to seem insane at some point in the future. You're going to go, I just can't believe I wasn't loading up on this stuff. So another reason to sign up for Wise Wolf, macroaggressions.gold. Get yourself on that auto buy program. I've been doing that for the last couple of years. I get a package with silver coins in it every month. Not a lot, you know, buying what I can, but I got all these expenses too, you know, but to the extent that I can, it's my forced savings account. I'm certainly not going to go take a silver coin down to the mall and buy something with it. I'm going to save it, right? Doesn't have counterparty risk. My asset doesn't mean that I need it. I need yours to go down, you know, have yourself some silver. Interest rates are a big thing right now. They're actually at normal rates, but normal compared to what we've been experiencing for the last 10 years. The last 10 years, it's been free money for the most part. People buying houses, getting 2.5% interest rates on their houses, you know, in the 70s, you buy a house with a 16% interest rate. You think about that now, the world would shut down if you did that, right? But that's something that we need to keep an eye on. Trump needs interest rates to be much lower. The 10-year rate, he needs it to be lower in order to refinance the trillions of dollars of debt that they have. Can they get it lower? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. But that's something to be mindful of. And, you know, you also have to acknowledge that there's a possibility that this could be a contagion effect, where something that doesn't even impact you, commercial real estate. You don't give a shit about the commercial real estate market, but what if the commercial real estate market starts to take down the medium-sized banks, which are the banks that traditionally lend on commercial projects? If commercial real estate goes in the toilet, and I mean like really in the toilet, these banks will default. If you get a couple banks that default, they pull down other banks because they're all interconnected. And next thing you know, there's a bunch of banks that have gone out of business, and maybe your money is sitting in one of them. And maybe the bank bail-in happens because of that. So you can see how one is connected to the other and the other. Let's talk about the media. The media's addiction to fear, to be fair, they're just doing their jobs. I mean, honestly, the mainstream media was designed to manage narratives for the state. And so if your state wants you to be fearful, it will be reflected in the content shown by the corporate horror media. And if you live in the United States right now, you turn on the mainstream media, television news, Fox, CNN, MSNBC especially, what are they selling you? They're selling you fear because they want you to throw your hands up and say, please, somebody save me. And the corporate horror media has been involved in these massive culture changing events well beyond my lifetime. JFK, they deeply involved. I remember watching the 1991 Gulf War, the first Iraq War, on CNN, Bernard Shaw pissing himself under the bed, and all the night vision, and you could see the green the anti-aircraft guns going off and all that, and the sirens, and you, holy shit, this is war made for television, brought to you by CNN Rodney King a year later, 1992. You know, that footage of the guys, Briseño and Kuhn and Lawrence Powell, all those guys beating the shit out of Rodney King, that happened on a daily basis in South Central Los Angeles. You ask anybody who lived in the hood, they said, shit, that was just the one that made it on TV. You know, it's been happening for a long time, but it was on TV. It was on TV for a reason. And it kicked in it, and it was used to pressure cook Los Angeles, man. And I can say that as somebody who was there in it, living in South Central Los Angeles in college, going to school during that thing, getting out of town when the riots kicked off, loading up my car and saying, I am out. Was I fearful? You bet your sweet ass I was fearful, with reason to be. But I was also proactive. And you know what? When the riots kicked off, I loaded up my car and I got as far away from there as I could. And nothing happened to me. So was I fearful or was I proactive? I was both. Fear can be your greatest ally. If you use it to create the change that you need to put you in a position where you're no longer going to be fearful, right? So use it as a spark to get you going. But don't let it destroy you and burn you. We watched them do that with the Cold War and the Russians, and how many people were building bomb shelters because they were convinced that they were going to be evaporated. What about get under your desk? If you know the nuclear fallout drills that our parents had in school, where it's like, everybody get under the desk. There's a nuclear bomb coming. All right, now cover your eyes and ears as this bomb evaporates. You know, just turns us into piles of sand. I mean, what are we doing here? It's the most unrealistic thing you could do. If there's a nuclear bomb that's going off by your school, you're all dead. But it's not about that. It's not about keeping people safe. It's about keeping people fearful that the Russians are just around that corner. They're definitely going to murder us if you don't get under the desk, if you don't authorize another $1 trillion for the military-industrial complex. And the same tactics being used again for the push for World War III. What about 9/11, right? What about the massive fear campaign in the aftermath of 9/11? The Muslims, you know, we got to get them there before they get us here, you know, all that stuff. They're in caves. There's a mastermind in a cave. He's plotting this great, grand attack against the United States from a cave somewhere. You're like, holy shit. You know, should we be fearful? That guy looks like he might be Muslim. That guy, he's a Sikh. He's got a turban on. He's not, it's the wrong team. He's not on their team. Well, you know, they all look the same to me. And that was happening. Right? So what about COVID? What about the fear campaign that was unfurled on us during COVID? Now, we weren't scared. I was not scared at all. I thought the whole thing was performance art. You know, it was ridiculous pantomiming experiment and psychological manipulation. But I'm in the minority. The majority of people were terrified because their television told them to be. Because the president came on and because all the people in perceived positions of authority and power told them to be scared of it. Even though their messaging contradicted each other, even though Fauci was saying, don't wear a mask, then he was saying, wear a mask, then he was caught without a mask, and then he was out at dinner, you know what I mean? And all that, you would see that and you go, well, wait a second, what's going on here? The point is be fearful. Always be fearful. Black Lives Matter. Oh, George Floyd. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. The cops are going to kill everybody. Bird flu's next. You can see it. I mean, you want to ask what's 2025? What's on your bingo card? Bird flu. 100%. Not because it's a real thing, not because it's actually going to kill you, but because there's been a calculation made that it works. Now, sometimes you have to recognize that the messaging is not intended for you. And that fear campaign is for somebody else. And when you catch that, then you can really see the mechanics at work. You can see, you go, oh, I get it. That nonsensical, you know, when they're talking about, well, COVID was coming up, it was going through the pipes in your apartment complex. It was coming up through the toilet. I'm serious, they were talking about this. It was coming up through the toilet. So it was actually, COVID was actually getting you through your butthole. Like if you were sitting on the toilet, it was coming up through there. And so you had to constant, and you hear that and you go, is this real? I mean, are you guys really selling this? And you go, wait a second, this is not for me. Obviously, I know this is bullshit. I have a functioning brain. I can, you know, use the logical portion of my head to figure out that this sounds nonsensical. Even if I don't have a background in virology, not that that's worth a goddamn thing, but even if you don't, you still know bullshit when you hear it, right? But then you would look and you would say, no, for that segment of the population, it's just reinforcing the fear. They're eating it up. Their ability to process, to rationally, to use critical thought in analyzing these situations has been turned off. That's the nice thing about fear. It will rekey the locks to your brain so that you can't get your key in there anymore. You're just broken. You're fearful. You're wearing a mask in your car by yourself. We see those people. Those people are ideologically subverted, as Yuri Bezmenov would say. What about social media? We pick on the media a lot, and rightfully so, but what about social media? I mean, it's a science experiment in there. It's a psychological traumatization campaign. It's a racism breeding. What is your social media feed showing you? I'll tell you, the only platform I'm really on is X. I have a Facebook account. I've got an Activist Post Facebook account with almost 500,000 followers there, which does nothing for me. It's just talking to about 80 people, you know, but my ex account wants me to feel a certain way. It is nothing but fights in a Waffle House, war drone footage, the drones that are in Ukraine, and they're watching troops, and then they zip in really fast, and then they presumably explode, but the camera sort of cuts out at the last second when everything blows up. They want me to see that all the time. Mass shoplifting sprees. They want me to see that. Zionist controlled politicians that are signing bombs. That's there constantly. Person starting problems on an airplane. A lady having a mental health crisis in the terminal because she can't get on her flight. And we watch the people come across the southern border in droves and. We see that travel issues. I see planes blowing up. I see, that motherfucker ain't real in the back. You know, people seeing aliens on planes, weather extremes, leftist burning things. I mean, my social media feed wants me to feel a very specific way about black people. I will tell you that right now. It wants me to hate them. It's showing me every scenario in which I could say, you know, these blacks are just the worst. You know, I don't, because I understand what's going on and I fully recognize that I know plenty of black people that do not act like this, right? So it's not everyone and every, but if I were to not have a broad real world experience, if I were somebody who did not in real life have friends that were, you know, in this particular case, black or however, whatever the scenario is, you know, if I don't have personal relationships and personal experiences to this, I could be potentially manipulated into thinking that they're all like this, that you just, you know, it's just, they don't want me going on a Royal Caribbean cruise. They keep showing me that I'm not going on a Royal Caribbean cruise, whether that's it, algorithm manipulation or not. I have seen some shit going on at the pools and at those royal, and I just go, nope, I'm not interested. I'll pay double to go on a cruise where I don't have to deal with that bullshit. But you can feel the manipulation. I recognize it because I'm looking for it. I'm more in tune to it. I'm not immune to it, of course, but I'm just in tune to it. I'm paying attention for it. But if you're not, and you don't, and if you're somebody that thinks, oh, I could never be manipulated by this, first of all, we can all be manipulated. They're really good at what they do. Give them credit, right? But if you're somebody that thinks, oh, I could never be hypnotized into thinking this, well, sometimes those are the people that the mind control, the programming takes a hold of the best. Because once it gets you, you don't even know that you can be fooled. So you're the easiest one to fool, right? So these algorithms are used to deliver the fear directly to us based on what they already know about us. And they know it will trigger us, right? They know our activity on the sites. They know who our friends are. They know how we talk to one another on there, or how we communicate, or what we like, or what we watch, or you know, they know us in some respects better than we know ourselves. It's customized fear sent directly to each person who allows it, shortening your attention span, making you angry, cooking your neuro pathways, you know, you're cooking your mind just a little bit. Propaganda in the digital world has really evolved, you know, and since the, you know, not that there wasn't social media before the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, but because there was in the form of you know, MySpace and the early days of Facebook and things like that. But really in the aftermath of that, when they normalized and legalized propaganda to be used on Americans, it doesn't just mean that it was going to be on your nightly news. It also meant it could be in your social media. And God knows it has been. These mainstream alternative media that you see on your social media platforms are being run by influencers who are either financed by foreign governments or financed by intel agencies or corporations, international corporations. So, you know, if you're going to be participating in social media, you also have to get yourself mentally prepared for dealing with a lot of fear porn coming your way, sent to you in order to make you have a very specific reaction. It's a little different. Sometimes it's fear, sometimes it's anger, sometimes it's jealousy, sometimes it's love, you know, whatever it is. Mostly they want you to feel a negative way. But remember what Bill Hicks said about, you know, he turns on the TV and he hears about all this. There's a murder in there and there's chaos and there's a war breaking out. And then I stick my head out of my window and I look around and it's crickets. So remember to stick your head out of your window every now and then and look around and see what you're actually experiencing. And if your social media feed and your real world experiences are not lining up, there's manipulation going on there. Let's talk about technocracy, because it's the coming robot takeover is just starting to register with a bunch of people, right? You want to be fearful of something? The problem is the people who should be fearful are too stupid to be fearful. Very Dunning-Kruger of them all. But if you're living in California and you're somebody that has no education, you're not really going anywhere, you think you're just going to get yourself a job at McDonald's flipping burgers and that's going to be fine for a while. Well, you know, you're with California fast food law putting the minimum wage at $20 an hour. We've talked about this. At some point, the calculation is made that you're going to be replaced by robots. You know, because they don't miss the bus. They don't give the manager bullshit excuses. They don't show up 15 minutes late. They don't forget to tuck their shirt in. They don't argue with you about your schedule. You know, all those things. They just go away. So AI replacing people's jobs, entire industries, you know, is that something to be fearful about? I don't know. Depends on what line of work you're in. Because you, again, you can choose to curl up into a ball and suck your thumb and be fearful and wait for the AI to eventually take over your job and put you out of business and deem you irrelevant. Or you can plan accordingly and say, I better insulate myself. I either better make myself the most valuable person at this company, make it so that I'm the last person they fire, or maybe I'm gonna need to get myself some additional skills that can't be replicated by machines or robots or whatever. But sitting around just waiting for it to eventually get you, that's a very defeatist mentality. And I just cannot subscribe to that, you know. The technocracy, look, there's plenty to actually be fearful of. You know, if you've read Brave New World and you see the direction that they want to take us, you know, the removal of human interactions, the removal of those familial bonds, we've already seen that starting to take place in Congress with the removal of the words, the banning of the words mother, father, brother, son, daughter. All the words used to describe a family are banned. You're not allowed to use them, which is crazy on its surface. But when you understand that their ultimate goal is to destroy the family unit, and in order to do that, first step is destroy the words that are used to describe the family unit, then it starts to make a little bit more sense. I mean, there's there will be plenty of things to be fearful of simply based on your anxiety surrounding the fact that the system knows everything about you. You can't hide. It knows what you're thinking, or it knows what you want. It serves up the perfect ad to you at the right time. And you go, oh, that's really convenient. And then your second thought is, damn, I wish they didn't know. I wish they didn't know me well enough to give me this ad at this exact time. We see nuclear war propaganda happening. We saw it a couple years ago in New York City where they're like, if you see a mushroom cloud out your window, make sure to get a wet rag and put it across the base of your door. It's like, bitch, this is a nuclear bomb we're talking about. What are you talking about? Take that wet rag and jam it down my throat. Let's wrap this thing up, right? In London, they were doing this just a couple weeks ago. They were saying, well, you know, everybody should have a bug out bag. Bug out to where? Bug out to for 3 days, then what? No, bug out when there's a flood in your area and you need to go somewhere for a few days until the flood goes away, and then you can come back to your house. You're not bugging out from a nuclear explosion. This is incompatible with logic and reason, but it's very much compatible with a campaign of fear to get you to think about that, even if it's just a little bit, that there might be a mushroom cloud over the skyline of London. World War III, we see this, the push, the drip campaign. But, you know, the truth about World War III is that the narrative works whether you actually have the war or you don't. It's different if you have the war, to be clear. You have a whole new set of fears that are unlocked through that. But if you don't, it doesn't mean that you can't still get the general public to be fearful of a war that doesn't exist yet. Ukraine and Russia, massive meat grinder. We've been watching that for the last couple of years. Israel, Gaza, Greater Israel Project. It's not conspiracy theory when they've got patches on the side of their uniforms of a map showing the Greater Israel Project. It's not conspiracy theory. It's conspiracy analysis. Israel versus Iran. What does that mean? Oh, well, I'm not in Israel and I'm not in Iran, so it doesn't matter to me. Well, are you in Russia? Are you in China? Because they're going to get drawn into it. Are you in the region surround? Are you in Syria, Saudi Arabia, Egypt? Everything's on the table, right? Let's get the world thinking about that. Well, that's not going to impact me because they're not going to set off any missiles anywhere near my house. Good. Lucky for you. Me too. But the oil has to get to you. What about when they shut down the Suez Canal? What if Iran mines the Strait of Hormuz and says, you will get no oil coming this way? Now what? Now you get a 1973 situation where things quadruple in price overnight or within the next couple of weeks. So there's plenty of ways in which they can make you fearful for things that haven't even happened yet. China versus Taiwan, semiconductor wars. Oh no, what does that mean? Well, it means that the price of chips is going to go through the roof and you're not going to be able to buy that computer. And the AI isn't going to be able to do its things. And maybe the Terminator is going to, and I don't know. I mean, they just fear for fear. They just get you scared for another potential conflict. And the media is the main culprit in all of this, banging the war drums constantly, asking the questions. Should we start a war with Iran next week, next month, 2 months from now? When should we start it? Never offering you the option that there should be no war at all, right? Because that doesn't serve their purposes. We want you to be fearful. We want you to be fearful, and we're going to put it on your nightly news. So let's wrap up with this. I think the best solution for facing fear is, well, first of all, you have to have had some experience dealing with fear, because a lot of times the way you perceive it in your head and what happens in reality are very different. And what you find is that, oh, I got myself all worked up for nothing. Maybe not every time, but we tend to exaggerate in our own heads and maybe perceive the threat as being a bit different than it really is. You need to be proactive and you need to be responsible for your own happiness. Okay. I'm not trying to turn this into some freaking, you know, woo-woo podcast episode where we're all, you know, we've got to touch grass, you know, well, maybe, but you got to do more than that. It's more than just having the right mindset. You have to act on these things. Once you do, it will start a cascading effect. Once you start to put yourself in a position where you are making yourself more resilient, things start to happen in a positive way that keeps you going down that path. If you stay in fear, you're stuck. If you can get yourself out of that and start moving in the direction towards resolving some of these things, to the extent that you can. A lot of this fear is out of your control, right? But you just have to be better at managing it. You have to be good at recognizing and placing some sort of calculation on the probability of these fears actually either coming true or impacting you, even if they do come true. You know, you have to go, well, you know, sometimes you have to say, that's not my problem. It's okay to say that. When there's nothing you can do to fix it, and the only thing that you can do is acknowledge it and feel shitty about it, sometimes you just have to say, that problem is not my problem. I will have my own problems. I'm not saying I'm without problems. I'm just saying that particular one doesn't involve me. I'm not getting into it. It's not ever going to impact me. So, you know, maybe I'll put that, maybe that'll be something. That'll be a luxury that I worry about that. If I'm at a place where I don't have enough to worry about, maybe I'll worry about your problems later on if I need to. Connect with other friends. Connect with people that are ideologically aligned with you, not the ones that think that call you stupid or say, you buying this storable food? Were you waiting for the apocalypse? Those people are cooked. The friends that we had, you know, when we were younger, not all of them continue with us in these different phases of our lives. Hopefully some of them do, but you can't wake everybody up. You can't save everybody. You know, you gotta reach the people that you can reach. And when you've got those connections to those people, make sure you go out and see them in person. Go to these live events, go to these conferences and events when they come through, you know, Third Eye Carnival in Acapulco. I've been talking about them for a while because I really enjoy the personal interactions that I have with the people that I meet there. Resets my clock. I start to feel better about things. Okay, this is going to be fine. So find your tribe, whoever they are, and have some human interaction. Get out of the banking system now. Get out now. If you're waiting for CNN to tell you it's time to get out, it's too late. You are going to have to make this decision yourself. If you're waiting for encouragement from external people, your family, your friends, the media, you'll be stuck with everybody else. You're going to have to trust yourself. You're going to have to do this in advance. Turn off the source of your fear, which is the television. Maybe it's your computer now. If you know that there's things that trigger you, we all get triggered by them, turn them off. Remove yourself from that, right? Don't allow that to... you know, don't allow that to ruin your life. You control the information that you put into your brain. You know, if you're listening to this, thank you. Great. I'm honored and flattered. But if you know that you watch MSNBC and you feel shitty and triggered for the next half hour afterwards, don't watch it. Don't fill your head with that stuff. It's not going to help you. Have extra food, have extra supplies, have gold, have silver, have Bitcoin, have all that stuff just in case. What's the worst that happens? You've got it and you don't need it. Good. You should be so lucky. But if you know that you've got a backup plan, you're going to feel better about things. You'll be less susceptible to the fear campaign. Prioritize your family. You know, the ones that you like, the ones that you get along with. Right? Prioritize them. Insulate them from the fear. If they're unaware of the fearful things out there, maybe the best strategy is keep them unaware of it for a little while. You take it. Since you know how to deal with it, you take it. You don't have to worry them about World War III if they're not thinking about it. Don't fill their heads with that. If your head is filled with it, keep that your thing. Don't add that to their diet of fear. They got enough fear. Your job is to deflect it from them if you can. Fear can ruin your life. It can destroy your health, but the choice is really up to you. Don't let these monsters win. Don't give them your energy. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right this second and share this episode with somebody that you think might enjoy it. If you want to connect with me, macroaggressions.io is the best place to do that. Go check out the audiobooks. Controlled Demolition of the American Empire has been out since 2020. The Octopus of Global Control audiobook came out in 2024. Hypocrisy, Surviving in a World of Cultural Double Standards is out 2025. You can get them on Amazon. You can get them at Audible. You can get them at BarnesandNoble.com. You can find the physical books, those places. You can get the audiobooks there as well. Thanks, everybody. Hope you're having a good day. Talk to you again soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.